Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Okay, welcome to hour two of our little show here. Let us know the kind of people you want to hear. If you see somebody out there on YouTube or something that you'd like us to have on the air, shoot us an email. We'll see what we can do. No, Kim Kardashian doesn't count. We don't do that one. Talk to Nicole Kidman, can you get her? USStemCellClinic.com is the name of the website, and we're going to talk to Dr. Kristen Camella. That's how you say it, doctor, right? Camella?
Yes, that's correct.
How are you, doctor?
Very good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I was looking at my stem cells this morning in the mirror, and I thought, well, I could probably just do something with them, you know, make them prettier or something like that.
That's right. Really tap into that technology inside you.
Yeah. How long have you been looking at stem cells, Doc?
So I began researching stem cells and their potential in the late 90s, working with a variety of different types of cells. Cells can be isolated from many different tissues inside our body. And so when I first began working in the space of regenerative medicine, I was looking at what are called bone marrow-derived stem cells. And just to kind of back up and give you a little bit of a global picture, the concept of regenerative medicine is that we have the ability to heal inside our body. Every single one of us is healing our tissue as we move throughout our day. Mm-hmm. And we can really tap into this technology that exists inside every single one of us and utilize it to improve our health. And this is the basic idea of regenerative medicine. And it's really a new paradigm of health, and it's going to help to enhance our lifestyles. And this is occurring right now in our generations. And so the future of medicine is already here today. And it's really going to work in combination with some of the things that we already do in medicine and potentially obsolete some of the things that we do in medicine. If we have the ability to heal our tissues from within, imagine the impact on so many different diseases, et cetera. Uh-huh. So one small component of regenerative medicine is stem cell therapy, and this has really been one of the main focuses of my research.
I see. Kristen Camella is here. If you care to ask a question with a comment, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We worked with Fraser Bailey on his, a little bit on his DVD or documentary called Root Cause on the root canals. And his new thing is a documentary on stem cells. And he's the one that told me about you. And he's got very good taste. So he said, yeah, you should talk to her. He said, she's a sharp girl. You better talk to her. I said, okay. So I said, okay. So that's how we hooked up with you. So are you saying then, see, our premise here at One Radio Network, not what we believe matters in this conversation, but I think it's interesting that I kind of believe that our body is always trying to heal itself, always trying to, actually, I think our body wants to stay the same and not age. I think aging is an optical collusion because we kind of believe it, but that's just me. And the body's always trying to heal and make things better, and it uses stem cells to do that?
That's absolutely true. So every single tissue inside your body has stem cells that are responsible for maintaining and healing that tissue. So to give you an example, if you went for a jog this morning, or maybe you walked up and down your stairs a few times, you would start to get little tears inside your muscles. And this is normal. You do activity and you get a little bit of damage in the muscle. And beneath the muscle in the basal lamina, you have stem cells that are sitting there kind of dormant, waiting for in case you get little tears in the muscle. And then it would come out, those cells would come out and begin to repair those tears. So this is why someone who, for example, works out a lot starts to get bigger muscles. It's because the stem cells go in and repair and make more and new muscle. this is going on inside your body at any given moment. You have constant turnover of tissues. So you have stem cells hard at work, regardless of your age. Sometimes people will say to me, well, I'm older, so how can my stem cells possibly be beneficial at this point? And the answer is, of course they're working. You're sitting here talking to me. If you didn't have stem cells, you would die in about an hour. So stem cells are hard at work regardless of your age. Now, their ability to circulate to where you need them may begin to decline, because as we age, we start to get a reduction of kind of our blood vessel supply. So what we can do is kind of tap into that technology that may be sitting in storage in one of your tissues and get more cells circulating, which allows us to utilize that technology that's in you and really just enhance it, take advantage of that power to heal.
So with your work, you're actually kind of giving Mother Nature a little kick in the booty a little to doing something that it wants to do naturally, but you're just kind of doing more of it?
That's exactly it. So the good news is that one of the most plentiful sources of stem cells inside our body is the fat tissue. Huh. And certainly we've got plenty of it here in the United States. So we found our new natural resource here in the U.S., and that's our fat tissue. It's we really have to change our relationship with fat. It's an amazing organ inside the body, and it does so much for us. And given that it's so plentiful in stem cells, we can really use this technology. So the process of getting your stem cells from the fat is relatively simple. This can be done in an outpatient type procedure where we just use some local anesthesia, local numbing, to numb just below the skin in the fat tissue and then collect a small sample of fat. Within that, you can get about 500 times more stem cells than what you would get from, for example, bone marrow. So it's really a rich source of stem cells that are typically just sitting there dormant. And once we isolate those cells, we can now place them exactly where we might need some additional help. So maybe you're having some challenges in your knee joint. So we could place the cells directly into your knee, do what's called an intra-articular injection or injection directly into the knee joint to help repair maybe some additional damage, or maybe you've developed some arthritis as you age, wear and tear on the joints, etc. Or maybe you're suffering from something more systemic, an autoimmune disease, or diabetes, heart, lungs. All of this has to do with two things: inflammation and damaged tissue. And stem cells are responsible for reducing inflammation and for repairing damaged tissue. So when you think of it that way, the indications and the use of stem cells could be limitless. We could apply this type of therapy to so many different diseases and injuries.
And so you're getting a lot of them out of the fat in an outpatient scenario and putting them in weak spots in the body?
That's correct. So, for people who have more systemic issues, we would do what's called an intravenous delivery, which means that we place the cells in an injection into your vein and allow those cells to circulate. What's so unique about stem cells is that they have the ability to home to areas of injury and areas of inflammation. And this is exactly how it works inside your body every day. So anytime you have an area of injury, so take, for example, you get a cut on your finger, your body will start to make signals, cytokines, proteins, and different things start to happen, which make the stem cells recognize that response. And they will immediately go to that area to begin that repair process. So when we place additional stem cells into circulation or into an area that's damaged, they will immediately go to those areas that are calling for it. So your body naturally calls for help where it needs it the most. This is what makes the technology so fantastic, because we don't even have to decide or help those cells go to where they're going to go. Your body decides where they need it the most. Now, sometimes what can be challenging is that a patient may come in thinking that they have an issue that is of most importance, but the body may have a different agenda. And it's always best to let the body decide what it needs.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of many natural folks, especially in Ayurveda medicine, they suggest that when we go in and do this or that, just because we think we should, right? I really should start working on my gallbladder, or I really should start working on my liver, or whatever, because everybody's doing it. That it can be a really more of a problem, because the body has a hierarchy in what it wants to work on next. That's interesting.
That's right.
And you believe that. That's your experience.
Absolutely. So I think that it's very important to allow the body to kind of dictate what it needs. Sometimes we let our mind get in the way of what the body needs. And so if we kind of sit back and listen to our body, we can learn many things about it. And this is why regenerative medicine and stem cell therapy is potentially life-altering. And we've seen this with many of our patients. You know, a patient comes in with one agenda in mind, but then their numbers in another area may improve. So again, just kind of listening to the body and allowing it to heal and do what is most needed.
But aren't you circumventing that when you pick out a body part like a knee or something and doc and squirting them in there?
Yeah, so this is, you know, sometimes a patient will come in and they have a very clear injury. They've got inflammation in the knee, or, you know, we can point to an MRI that says, you know, XYZ. So in that case, you know, those are a little bit more obvious. But a lot of times those patients will also choose to combine a joint injection, for example, with a systemic injection. So then they're kind of getting, you know, the both things addressed at the same time. So looking at the knee, which is addressing, you know, that specific pain that the patient may be coming in with, but then allowing the systemic injection to take care of things that they may not know about.
This is kind of all anecdotal, so probably doesn't mean anything, but I just want to mention it to you. Over the years, of course, we run into people all over the world, especially people that are keen or getting healthier, and some of them, you know, have the resources financially to do some pretty interesting things, you know, and I've run across, you know, I would say, I think it's fair to say 5 different people that have gone this place and that place in Mexico and Europe and have done stem cell therapy. And, you know, I've never really heard anything from them where they were all that thrilled with what they, you know, the results they got. And, and I'm just wondering what's going on in the stem cell world out there.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a lot of different types of stem cells. Not all stem cell procedures or processes are created equally, if you will. And sometimes people are looking for a quick fix. You know, it's a one-time injection, and then you're going to start running marathons. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, anytime you're trying to repair tissue or heal damage that has been going on for potentially decades or leading up to, you know, say, for example, arthritis, this didn't happen in one day. This happened over many, many years. So that recovery process can be slow. And so this concept of a one-time dose or quick fix is not realistic. So one of the things that we do is called banking of the stem cells, meaning that we will do the initial treatment, the first treatment with stem cells, and then we bank your stem cells or freeze them at very, very low temperatures in liquid nitrogen so that we can come back and repeat dose. So especially for these chronic type conditions, the ability to come back and redose, do multiple treatments, has proven very, very beneficial. We've also found that in our patient population, autologous stem cells, meaning stem cells from the patient themselves, have shown to be the most beneficial, as opposed to using stem cells from a different source or from another person, whether it be from birth tissue or, you know, adult tissue, for example, bone marrow allogeneic from a donor patient. We find that the stem cells from the patient themselves seem to respond inside the patient better. And then with the repeat dosing, we can address long-term chronic situations. There's really no reason for patients to leave the country at this point. We are doing these procedures here in the United States, and we're having great success. Now, I might mention, just kind of a side note, we are right now in a battle to preserve the rights of Americans to continue to have access to their own stem cells.
Oh, great. Oh, the Gov's getting involved now.
Yes. So one of the things that the FDA, on behalf of the Department of Justice, has come forward and said is that the stem cells that are inside your own body are a drug. and that this is something that the government should regulate.
Really?
Our stance, and my personal stance, is that the stem cells inside my body are most certainly not a drug, and they are not something that should be owned by a company or by the government or by anyone else. These are my cells, and I should have the right to utilize my cells as I see fit, working in combination with my practitioners. And this is something that I intend to continue to stand up for the American people. They have a right to heal their own body, and this is not something that the pharmaceutical companies should necessarily be involved in.
Oh, so the FDA, along with the DOJ, they're beginning to argue that these are drugs. Your own stem cells are drugs because they work or something, and we should have a cut in this somehow.
Yes, that's absolutely it. So it was earlier this year, the FDA came to me through my attorneys and stated that they view these cells inside our body as a drug, and that as such, our clinics with the practitioners at the clinic should not be offering these in-clinic surgical procedures without the appropriate drug approval processes. The challenge with that is that the practitioners are already regulated by the medical boards within each state. So we are already under regulations and have to maintain certain standards appropriate with the state and the medical boards, et cetera. So this over-regulation at the federal level and deeming these as a drug would essentially stop the field in its tracks, forcing patients to go offshore and to spend a lot more money and then not have access to the repeat dosing that would potentially be necessary. It doesn't necessarily stop the field. What it does is limit the field to patients who can A, afford it, and B, who can travel outside the country. So our opinion is that absolutely not. These are your cells, you own them, and you should have a right to utilize these. So it was about March or April that the Department of Justice contacted and stated that if we did not discontinue these surgical procedures using the patient's own cells, that they would in fact file a lawsuit. So they gave us an opportunity to sign what was called a consent decree. A consent decree that would state that we would discontinue these procedures and essentially go away and stop doing it, and then they would not file a lawsuit on us. And I said, no chance. I'm not going to sign that consent decree because I've seen plenty of patients get out of their wheelchair and walk again. So it is my obligation to have a voice for the patients that don't have a voice, and I'll continue to fight for the rights of Americans. So I have been sued personally by the United States of America, which I didn't even know was a possibility until this year. It was the first I had ever heard of such a thing. And I feel that we should have this right. And I think it's important that Americans understand that they currently have the right and that it is potentially going away, and that they should stand up and tell the United States of America that it is their cells and they own them.
Can you stay right there? We're going to do a little break here.
Sure.
Thank you very much. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, Dr. Christian Camilla. Really fascinating, hey? Biohacking and stem cell therapy. She is a U.S. Stem Cells Chief Science Officer. Extensive background in the study and implementation of biohacking and stem cell therapy. So we're going to dig further into we're going to get real geeky, try to understand how this all works with Dr. Camilla. If you'd like care to join us, it is 888-663-6386, email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Normally, we're not big fans of doing any kind of oils other than extra virgin olive oil, perhaps in some nice containers that are not allowing light to come in, because so many of these oils get rancid and just don't, you know, they're just not happy at all, you know, especially the stuff at the store and even the things at the hippie food stores. You got to be careful because they've done things over the years called cold pressed and whatever, right? You've seen them all, cold pressed, and pretty much cold pressed doesn't mean anything. Well, we are working with Andreas Wechter, who is a gold medal winner out of Germany, and they kind of gave him so many pain pills and steroids and weird stuff just to help him win a gold medal. And you know how these Olympic, you know, things, you know, how they're run. It's hardcore. And he, for the most part, healed himself, especially his gut that was just IBS. He had all kinds of stuff, Crohn's, with some fresh pressed flax oil that his neighbor just would scoosh it up and he would do it. And he got all turned on to this and started doing the research. There's a company now that's doing these pristine oils called Andreas Seed Oil, Andreas Seed Oils, and you can click on it through our website. And he has presses that literally have no friction and no heat. Somehow he does it. And he has it so the seeds don't even get into the oil itself, if you can imagine that. And some really creative seeds that he has oils with, and they're all virtually no oxidation. They're in Myron glass. And this is, if you're going to do oils, this is the way to do it. And he has things like black sesame seed oil, pumpkin seed oil, coriander seed oil, hemp oil, sunflower oil, flax oil. What are some of the other ones? Well, black cumin seed. You can just ask Dr. Google about black cumin seed, and it's some pretty remarkable things claimed that this will help with. And if you're going to do one, boy, get this one, because this is, I mean, this is like the only way I would ever do oils in it, really. In Myron glass, he has a 5-seed oil blend. So click on the ad on the front page of One Radio Network and look around, see which ones you want, and try a few of them. You could do the sunflower seed oil on your face as well. Maybe mix a little bit of the pearl seam in there. And that's a nice kind of face thing you can do. That's kind of fun, right? And these are, they've had several of them tested, and the ones they've had tested, they have absolutely no oxidation, or very, very little, like 0.000, unheard of in the world of oils. Andreas Seed Oils on the front page, One Radio Network. Ken Roll is going to be here the last Monday, or the fourth Monday of the month. I think I can get it. And he has two or three different products that you might want to look at right away. The Golden Pyramid on the front page. This is a little guy that you can plug in to your bedroom, and it really will help with your sleep and helps to make the EMF stuff that you're getting, cell phone towers down the street and stuff like that, Wi-Fi's. We recommend you don't have Wi-Fi in your home, and if you do, certainly turn it off at night. These Wi-Fi things are not good. Anyway, so this Golden Pyramid will help you sleep and help your body deal with these kinds of things. Also, then he has the Vitalizer Plus, which is a really nice a water structuring device. Structuring the water is very, very interesting. Puts it into a much more absorbable, and he puts some organic minerals in the water. We like to dump some of the probiotics from Wayne Blakely, multi-blend, and the minerals into the structuring device, structure up the water, and that's what Doodle and I, my girl, that's what we drink, and it's really good. And so you can structure the water, that's fun, and then he also has the Home Shield device where you can get hooked up on a solar panel and put the Home Shield, and it goes out a few miles or so, and it does your whole house and your neighbors and everything, and really protects from a lot of stuff. As a matter of fact, protects from things that he can't even talk about, if you know what I mean. Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, because you know the gov, you got to be careful with things that you say and what you do and all of that. So we got some things going on with Ken Rolla's Living Fresh and Alive website, and right through OneRadioNetwork.com, and see if you like something.
Brian Clement, who heads up the Hippocrates Institute in Florida, talked about saunas here.
Elke writes in for Brian Clements. Would Brian give us some tips on what supplements we would need to take if we do saunas several times a week to replenish lost minerals from sweating?
Well, Dr. Rao, who you had on, is a colleague and a friend. We do often conferences together in Europe, and I agree. We have saunas here. I take a sauna, so you know this, no matter where I travel in the world, 365 days a year. I think it's mandatory.
Really?
87%, listen closely, okay. 87% more heavy metals and chemicals come out in an infrared.
Well, no wonder we feel better when we take these saunas. We have the Relax Far Infrared Sauna we've talked about on sale through August, $950 delivered continental U.S. If you live outside there, email me, Patrick, at OneRadioNetwork.com, and you can order away right now on OneRadioNetwork.com. Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
All righty. Having fun talking to Dr. Kristen Camella. And you're in Florida, Doc?
Yes, yes. We're located in Florida. We have three clinics here in Florida, one in the Fort Lauderdale area, one in West Palm, and one in the Villages, which is outside of Orlando.
Uh-huh. Here's George. I think he's in Seattle, and he's been diagnosed with the weak heart muscles. Doctors are concerned about a myocardial infarction, you know, weak muscles of the heart, and yes, wanting to know if something that you're offering could maybe help them with that.
Yes, actually, we've published more in the cardiac space than anyone in the world. We've even done a double-blind placebo-controlled trial.
Really?
In congestive heart failure. So I would encourage everyone to go to PubMed.com and just type in my last name, which is Camella, and then my first initial K, and you can access some of those journals. So in particular, in the space of cardiovascular disease, in one of our double-blind studies, one of the primary endpoints is looking at exercise capacity. How far can a patient walk in a timed 6-minute period? And what we discovered is that the patients who received stem cell treatments walked 100 meters further, an entire football field length, as opposed to those who had received a placebo control injection. So just to kind of put that in perspective, biventricular pacing was approved with a 20-meter differential. So we're looking at something that is 5 times greater than the gold standard. So this is something that will truly revolutionize how we address congestive heart failure and cardiac disease. So what we found is that these patients also can improve their heart function, the ability of the heart to pump blood. The heart is really the most amazing electronic device that has ever been made. Name one other device that can work for 100 years, beating every second without fail. There's no such device, certainly not your iPhone. It'll be dead by next Christmas because there'll be a new model out. So it's really kind of a fantastic machine that's inside of our body. And what we want to do is utilize the stem cells to repair some of that damaged tissue that can occur in the heart, in particular after you have blockages and experience a heart attack. You start to get portions of the heart that are no longer functioning and no longer beating. Remember that the heart is a muscle. So by applying the stem cells to these areas of damaged tissue, we can actually help to create new muscle that can then function and improve the ability of the heart to pump blood, which is typically measured in something we call ejection fraction, the ability of the heart to pump blood.
But even without the stem cells, you're saying, or I hear you say, that the body's trying to do that anyway as well.
That's right? Exactly.
That's
right.
The body's
so
trying
you,
to, yeah.
You will recover. So even when a patient has a heart attack, maybe their ejection fraction would initially go down to even in the 20s or 30s, the body will start to recover some of that. So if you are able to survive your heart attack and revascularize, open up the blockages, the heart muscle will recover some of that damage. So what we're trying to do with stem cell therapy is to improve that recovery. So to get you closer to a normal functioning heart. The challenge is when you have a heart attack, that blood flow is then reduced to the heart, and with the lack of blood flow, you start to get dead tissue because there's no oxygen being carried to that tissue. And when you have dead tissue, the rest of the tissue has to work extra hard because it's a muscle. It's working very hard. It can start to grow, and that's when you start to get an enlarged heart, and you start to get all of the things that come along with congestive heart failure, which is the congestion, buildup of fluid, an overworking heart, and then all of your other organs start to suffer. So it's really kind of a vicious cycle and a death sentence for patients who are starting to enter into that congestive heart failure. There's no drug on the planet that can keep you alive for an extended period of time. So this is really going to be a new paradigm of health, utilizing the body's own healing potential to reverse some of these things that have been damaged.
We had a good conversation with a fellow about about the eyes and the different things that they see with cataracts and glaucoma and how they are actually a representation of what's going on in the whole body. And the little veins in the retina and how they get all plaqued up, and you can tell that that's going on. Really cool stuff for preventative kind of things. I wonder, have you done work with putting, actually, their own, somebody's stem cells in their eyes to help with this or that with the eye problems?
Yeah, so earlier on, probably 4 or more years ago, we were working in eye cases. And there are plenty of practitioners around the world who continue to do some research in that. We have actually discontinued work in the eye. Even though we did have some good results in the eyes, we had some adverse events associated with eye cases. So we decided to not focus on eye indications at this time. That doesn't mean that it doesn't necessarily work. We have just decided to focus on some of the other diseases that we've had some very nice results in. We've treated over 10,000 patients, and in 10,000 patients, our safety profile is very strong. We have some excellent results, and we've published many of those results as well, demonstrating efficacy as well as safety.
So what are the downsides to it? I mean, and the ones... Have you had some things where things didn't go totally well, and what would happen?
Yeah, certainly. Anytime you do a medical procedure, there's risks associated with it. Anytime you pierce the skin, there are risks of infection. There's also risks of interaction. So a lot of times patients present to us on a variety of different medications, and those medications can be interacting with each other, and they can also affect your body's normal immune response or that immunomodulatory response. So when you start introducing, even though the stem cell therapy is a natural therapy, when it's introduced in combination with some of the pharmaceuticals that patients are on, there certainly could be unknown risks associated with it. But we've published the world's largest safety paper in this therapy. We, in that paper, looked at over 600 cases, and the safety profile was very strong in those cases. The most common complaint from a patient was discomfort, swelling from the site of removing the fat tissue, all of which resolved. So that, again, that safety profile is very, very strong. No pharmaceutical drug has such a strong safety profile. These are your body's natural healing response. So tapping into that technology is a very safe method.
Here's an email for you from Ed. He's in Cleveland, Ohio. My son was born with spina bifida. He can walk with the help of AFO braces. Is there anything that you see in your stem cell research that could possibly help him regain normal neural function like you and I?
Yeah, so one of the things that's a little bit more challenging to address are genetic situations. So something that is in the genes cannot necessarily be rewritten with stem cell therapy. That isn't to say that regenerative medicine couldn't help, because regenerative medicine could also include gene therapy. So this is something that would certainly be for the future, a combination of a cell therapy plus a gene therapy looking to address any sort of genetic deformities. Stem cell therapy can address the symptoms associated with a genetic situation, but it's not going to rewrite the genes. So again, you would have to really look to a gene therapy in combination. We do treat a lot of neurological conditions. We're probably one of the only clinics in the world that is looking at using stem cell therapy for neurological conditions. So oftentimes when we're trying to address a neurological symptom and or disease, we will deliver the cells what is called intrathecally. And what that means is we inject the cells into the lower portion of the back, into the spinal cord fluid, to allow the cells to circulate, to cross the blood-brain barrier, and to address some of the neurological conditions. So this would include things like ALS, Parkinson's, MS. We can also do a combined approach where we'll do the intrathecal to address some of the neurological symptoms, as well as a systemic IV delivery to address some of the system conditions and symptoms that are going on.
So what's all this with the stem cell fetus thing, you know, the whole controversy about that? I mean, What has this been about? What's the motive to get these guys out of, I guess they get them out of aborted fetuses?
So what you're referring to is called embryonic stem cells.
Yeah, I just couldn't grab that word, sorry.
Yes, yes. So these are typically taken 5 days after gestation. So egg and sperm come together and begin to form what is called an inner cell mass, which is a cluster of cells. So this would be done, for example, in a petri dish. Oftentimes it's when somebody is undergoing in vitro fertilization. And that mass of cells can be isolated and then placed into petri dishes and grown. Those would be embryonic stem cells. So those are the stem cells that are oftentimes part of the controversy. And the reason is that once you isolate that inner cell mass, that fetus can no longer develop. And the challenge with embryonic stem cells, in addition to the kind of ethical debate, is that embryonic stem cells are a bit like wildfire. They tend to grow very rapidly, and they tend to be easily influenced by their environment. And the reason they grow so rapidly is because they're intended to make an entire being. This isn't necessarily the type of cell that you would want to utilize when addressing degenerative conditions or injuries in an adult. In other words, if you have an injury in your meniscus, in your knee, what you need is new cartilage or new meniscus tissue. So why not use what's called an adult stem cell, which is what is used inside your body to create new tissue? You wouldn't want to inject embryonic stem cells, which are designed to create a new baby. In other words, you don't want a baby in your knee. You want cartilage. So this is one of the reasons that our team has chosen to work with what are called adult stem cells. Adult stem cells are the cells that are constantly circulating inside our body and responsible for creating new tissue. So for me, from a scientific perspective, it actually makes more sense to use stem cells that are committed to forming tissue as opposed to stem cells that are committed to forming an entire being. So this is, as a result, I don't actually have to enter into the ethical debate associated with embryonic stem cells because, in my opinion, from a scientific perspective, it makes more sense to use adult stem cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Well, you're ready for that question, Doc. Good for you. You probably asked that before.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of confusion among, you know, patients, et cetera, regarding the different types of stem cells, and they don't understand necessarily that there are stem cells inside their body hard at work that can be utilized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a doc on about 2 years ago, and I don't even know why he was doing some work with reconstructing the jaw. You know, mm-hmm. with people, and they had all these massive surgeries with, you know, really this cancer and all that. And boy, they were doing some pretty interesting things with taking stem cells. And he was just really head over feet over some of the results they were seeing with doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Stem cells could certainly be used in combination with any surgical procedures to help promote healing. So reduce the amount of time that would be required for that healing and improve the success. The other thing is that stem cells naturally bring down inflammation. This is just part of your body's response. So to kind of go back to that concept of you get a cut on your arm, the first thing that happens is the platelets are responsible for preventing you from bleeding out. So they would go to the area and start clotting. And this is why you don't just keep bleeding when you get a cut. The next thing that happens is that your white blood cells will go to the area and they kind of wreak havoc. They don't discriminate. They go to the area, they mess with the pH, they create this swelling sensation. And the reason they do that is because they want to prevent infection. So unfortunately, sometimes our bodies overreact with the inflammation. And the next stage is that your stem cells come in and they tell those white blood cells to quiet down. And they start bringing down that inflammation and then they start promoting the formation of new tissue. So the challenge is sometimes our inflammatory response is too big and too long. And sometimes our regenerative response is not long enough. So really, we're just going to tap into that technology, try to quiet down some of the over-inflammation, and then try to extend that regenerative stage. When you think about a lizard that loses its tail, it can take 2 years to grow back that tail. And so for stem cell therapy, it's a much slower process. So I think it's important to educate patients about the process of healing and repair. Because I think we've become a society that's accustomed to a quick fix. They want to take one quick pill and then feel instantly better. This process is a little bit longer, and it's more permanent, though. And it doesn't just mask symptoms. I think we've all become very familiar with the unfortunate opiate epidemic, which is really just masking symptoms. What we want to do with regenerative medicine is get to the root cause, really address the underlying condition and change that. Change the damaged tissue, and then we don't need the opiates to address the symptom of pain.
Yeah. Even dentists, and my dentist, Stuart Nunley, they're doing some things. It's very, I think it probably an infant form of stem cells, but it's something poly-rich peptide.
Yes, platelet-rich plasma.
Yeah, platelet-rich plasma that he uses in his patients to go in there and help the cavitation, or when they, or when they take out a tooth, that was a root canal. That's none of them were good. He uses he uses these guys in there to help the heal. It's pretty cool.
Yes. So dentists were one of the first fields to really embrace the platelet-rich plasma, which is a part of regenerative medicine. Mm-hmm. And the reason this works, if we go back to my example of the cut on the arm, the platelets are the first responders. They arrive to the cut and they stop the clotting. So, they start the clotting, they stop the bleeding. But the next thing they do is truly fascinating. They act like the commanders. They start sending messages to the rest of your body to do things. So the first thing they'll do is say, white blood cells, get in here, make some inflammation, make sure there's no bacteria. Next thing they do is they attach to the surface receptors of the stem cells, and they start commanding the stem cells to do something. So they'll command the stem cells to make copies of themselves, to replicate, or they'll command the stem cells to begin creating tissue. So the platelets, you can think of them as fertilizer for your stem cells, which are the seed. So by combining the platelet-rich plasma with a naturally occurring regenerative response. So in the case of the dentist example, they're already doing a surgery, so they're already creating an immunomodulatory response. They're creating damage, which then has to get healed. The platelets can help to improve that healing process. But you can also use the platelets if you get an injury. So say you have an injury in your knee, something acute, you hurt your ACL. You can immediately go in and get an injection of platelet-rich plasma. This is becoming more standard care. More and more practitioners throughout the world are utilizing platelet-rich plasma. And then, of course, you hear of people using platelet-rich plasma even in aesthetics. You can use it on the skin. It's very rich in growth factors, cytokines, proteins, all of which can help with that collagen production and give you a nice youthful glow. To tell you the truth, I actually have a bottle of platelet-rich plasma that I keep in my refrigerator at all times. I use it on my skin. I use it if I get a cut. I use it if my sinuses are a little inflamed and bothering me. I'll just spritz some platelet-rich plasma up my nose, and it brings down that inflammation right away.
Oh, so it's your own platelet-rich plasma.
It's your own platelet-rich plasma.
Man, I want a bottle of my own. Where do I get that?
Yeah, well, we do it at our clinics. So it's typically good in your refrigerator for about 4 to 6 weeks. So it's a very easy procedure. It's a blood draw. Most practitioners are charging anywhere from $500 to $1,000 for the platelet-rich plasma. And like I said, I use it for a variety of different things.
That's funny. That's amazing. You and ladies are coming in, probably guys too, and you're actually shooting up their little face like a natural kind of Botox thing and get more collagen in their face too?
Yes. So you can use platelet-rich plasma in a couple different ways. You can inject it into fine lines in the way that you might utilize Botox. But you can also just apply it topically to the skin. So you can do either some microneedling or some microabrasion and then apply the PRP, and it just makes for very smooth-looking skin.
Oh, that's pretty fun. Here's an email. Mm-hmm. Can stem cell therapy help with adult onset muscular dystrophy?
So, again, muscular dystrophy can be one of those genetic diseases that we're trying to address. And so I would say that we would typically use stem cells to address symptoms there, but not necessarily as changing the genetic profile. So stem cells aren't going to change your genes, but may address some of the symptoms. So in that case, you can anticipate that repeat dosing would be required.
Mm-hmm. Another email, do stem cells actually rebuild knee cartilage that you can prove by x-rays, or is it just theory?
So certainly lots of studies published at this point demonstrating increased joint space, increased cartilage volume, et cetera, and or repair. The debate is whether or not the cells injected are the ones differentiating and creating that new tissue, or if those cells injected are stimulating an immunomodulatory response and then other cells are homing to that area to help create. The actual formation of tissue and joint space increase has been documented. And certainly you can, again, refer to PubMed. We published a study, if you look up my last name, we published a study on osteoarthritis demonstrating that increased joint space in before and after MRI. This was actually one of the things that led to, the aha moment in my career. So early on, I was working with a startup company in Maryland, and we were doing some studies on the goat knee joint. The goat knee joint is very similar to the human joint, so it's oftentimes used in animal studies. And we were injecting the stem cells into the knee after the goats had a meniscal injury and then had developed arthritis. So they had worn away cartilage, et cetera. And when we were doing the scoring of the joints, we would remain blinded as to which goats had gotten stem cells and which goats had not gotten stem cells. And without knowing which ones had received, because I was blinded when I would do the scoring, it was obvious. Many joints had increased cartilage and the others did not. And so then, of course, after we did the scoring, we matched up which ones had received the stem cell treatment, and sure enough, they did. And it was my kind of aha moment when I sat there and I just said, my God, this is going to change medicine as we know it.
Wow. Those aha moments are fun, aren't they, Doc?
Yes, they are. It's not been an easy ride, but it has been a fun one.
It's kind of like when you find just the right place to live in Florida that don't have any crocodiles within 50 miles. And you go, yeah, I think I'm going to live here. Just kidding about that. I don't know why I think about crocodiles when I think of Florida. That's terrible. I should think about, I don't know, something else. Isn't that crazy?
Okay. Yeah, we're not bothered by the alligators so much.
Oh, alligators.
We have them in our backyard. We don't mind.
Do they come in your backyard?
Yes. We live right on the canal, which is connected to the Everglades. So we're in the neighborhood that's one of the last neighborhoods before the Everglades. So it's, pretty far out in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area, the suburbs. And we often see gators in the back canal. They say that children who grow up in Florida learn at a young age to run zigzag because that's how you outrun an alligator.
Oh, great. But they're not really aggressive, I guess. They don't try to eat you. Well, good to know. Thanks. I feel better already. Can your guest please address the issue if stem cells possibly triggering cancer cell growth? How do they screen for this possibility in their patients?
So I believe you said the question is whether or not there's a risk associated with the stem cells being injected turning into cancer?
It's triggering cancer cell growth.
Triggering cancer.
Right.
Okay, yes. So this concern is much more associated with embryonic stem cells. And the reason is that embryonic stem cells grow very rapidly. So if you were to take raw embryonic stem cells and inject them into an adult human, they would form a teratoma, a tumor. Ooh. And that's why you would not want to take raw embryonic stem cells and just inject them into a human. Adult stem cells have something called growth inhibition associated with them, which means that when they grow in an area and it becomes crowded, they automatically send signals to downregulate that growth and to instead form tissue. Oh. The other thing is that those cells naturally go to damaged area. If there's no damage that they have to go to, they just would circulate out of your body. They wouldn't necessarily just go to an area and start forming a tumor. So those were all kind of theoretical risks that had to do with some in vitro, meaning like in a petri dish experiments, where they took cancer cells growing in a dish and they took stem cells growing in a dish and then they grew them together. And what they found is that when they grew stem cells together with cancer cells, the cancer cells grew more rapidly. That is not an indication of what would happen inside your body when you inject just circulating stem cells. You have circulating stem cells at any given moment. And in 10,000 plus patients, we have never seen an incident where when we injected the stem cells, it formed a teratoma or a tumor or increased risk of cancer, et cetera. So those theoretical concerns, A, had more to do with embryonic stem cells, and B, never really came to fruition.
So kind of getting the picture, if these stem cells are everywhere and they're different depending on the age maybe and the evolution of the person, that they're all kind of got this genetic or programming into, they know who they kind of know who they are and what they're supposed to do, kind of thing. They have their own state of consciousness, if you will.
Yeah, that's actually a great way to look at it. Yeah, and yeah. They have the potential to form many different types of tissue.
Yeah.
So they get influenced by their environment. We refer to it as plasticity. That's the term that is used. So they're plastic in nature, which means they're easily influenced by their friends. And if you put stem cells next to cartilage, they tend to form cartilage. If you put stem cells next to cardiac muscle, they tend to form cardiac muscle. So that's why they will home to where your body needs it. And then depending on that environment that they've homed to, they will then change what they grow up to be.
Uh-huh. Does your guest, this is from George, know anything about telomeres? Is that involved with stem cell therapy and lengthening their telomeres?
Is. Yeah. So telomeres really tell us our age. And what we all end up dying of is shortened telomeres. Now, we're not, we're one of the only, you know, there's not every species dies of shortened telomeres, but we are a species that dies of shortened telomeres. So telomeres you can think of as shoelace caps. So inside every single one of our cells, we have our DNA, and you have that double helix structure. And then at the end of that structure is a little cap, which is your telomere. So the reason I say you can think of it like a shoelace cap is that on your shoelaces, when that cap, that little plastic cap starts to wear away and then eventually comes off, what happens is your shoelace unravels. So same thing in your cells. When the telomere, the cap on your DNA starts to shorten, eventually your DNA starts to unravel. So every time you have replication of your cells, your telomeres shrink just a little bit. And so every time the cells are dividing, your telomeres are kind of shrinking. So as we age, we're getting shorter and shorter telomeres. Now, certain things will make your telomeres shorten faster. For example, if you have a disease, your telomeres are shortening faster than, say, normal. Or if you are exposed to chemicals and toxins, your telomeres will shorten faster. One of the things that actually makes your telomeres shrink faster is people who are pessimists. If you worry about your telomeres shortening, they will actually shorten faster.
Of course.
Be an optimist. Of course. And do not worry about your telomeres shortening. A few things to make your telomeres stay longer for a longer period of time. Keep your inflammation levels down. So you can do this by, you know, reducing your toxic exposure. So toxins come from a variety of different places. They can come from your food. They can come from your water. They can come from your environment. You know, do you live in a house that has mold in it? These are all toxins that would then cause your telomeres to shorten faster. It's also been shown that vitamin D can help to keep your telomeres longer. So getting a nice dose of sun every single day, no SPF, get out there and take it in. It's so good for you, and it can help to keep your telomeres longer. Exercise has been shown to keep your telomeres longer. Getting your blood circulating, getting things going. These are all things that you can do to kind of extend that telomere length for a longer period of time.
Just kind of natural things that we associate with people, long-lived people, you know, doing good things, taking care of themselves, eating great food, getting out in the sun and walking, have a positive attitude and not worrying. They just live longer. I mean, you know.
They do.
You know, they just do.
So here's a few tricks to increase your stem cells. So the first is actually better than free because it's called intermittent fasting. So not only do you not have to spend money, you have to spend less money because you don't have to buy as much food. Plus you save time because you don't do as much cooking. So if you limit your eating to between, say, 12 p.m. and 8 p.m., say an 8-hour window, and then the rest of the day you don't eat, you can actually increase the number of circulating stem cells. So it's a very easy biohack, if you will, to increase that stem cell circulation. So sometimes when people first start getting into this, they're saying, oh my gosh, but I'm starving, you know, like, what can I do? The first thing is, you know, obviously you're sleeping a lot of that time, so it's good not to eat while you're sleeping. So certainly no middle of the night snacks. The second thing is, when you wake up in the morning, if you're not hungry, don't eat. Listen to your body. That old tale of breakfast is the most important meal of the day was probably put out there by Kellogg's. So listen to your body. If your body's saying it's not hungry, allow it to just keep burning and fueling and stimulating that stem cell production. And so then maybe you would skip your breakfast meal and move right into your lunch meal. So that makes it a little bit easier. And the other thing that you can do to help curb the appetite is to do a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in water. This will help to address some of those cravings, especially when you first start getting into intermittent fasting, making it a lot easier. So I actually have two teenagers, a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, and they know now, but when they were first, in school age, the teachers would say, okay, we've got, you know, big testing day tomorrow, so make sure you eat a big, you know, wholesome breakfast. And so the kids would come home and tell me, you know, we've got important testing tomorrow, so I've got to eat a big important breakfast. And I said, absolutely not. You've got to fast. This will make your brain better for the test. Oh. So they know now that important days are for fasting. And actually, we don't really do breakfast at my house. We move right into lunch.
I'll be done. And there's actually science, Doc, that shows this intermittent fasting idea increases the amount of stem cells?
Absolutely. Yeah, wow. It's a very published that you can read about on PubMed, as well as now some of the main newspapers, et cetera, are writing about this concept of intermittent fasting and how successful it can be for many people. Uh-huh. Now, on the other hand, if you wake up in the morning and you're starving, your body's trying to tell you something. Yeah. So listen to your body. So, you know, don't force yourself into something that doesn't make sense. You know, we really have to tap into what our body is telling us. And when we start listening to these signals of our body, it will tell us a lot.
Are you learning anything about the kinds of foods that we are associating with more stem cells, like carbs, proteins, whatever, other than the yuck stuff like that we know about drugs and, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So diet is so individual and so specific. What works perfectly for one individual does not work for the person sitting right next to them. And so you really, again, have to start listening and trying different things. So kind of a few general rules of thumb. If you're eating food that's creating a lot of inflammation, it's distracting your stem cells because they're constantly having to address the inflammation from your diet. So in general, most grains, so think bread, pasta, cereal, et cetera, are going to be pro-inflammatory. So you want to steer clear of grains. And a little trick on that, it's actually harder to limit your grains than to completely eliminate your grains. So if you're trying to limit your grains, you're always going to have that little kind of craving because your body wants that cheap fuel, cheap carbohydrates. And there's really nothing beneficial from, for example, a Cinnabon. There's no reason for you to eat that. You're not gaining anything from it. And I always encourage people to change their dialogue with food. When you eat something that's not good for you, that's, for example, high in, you know, grains, flour, and sugar, ask yourself, why are you punishing yourself? You wouldn't buy the most expensive car you could find, a Lamborghini, and then go to the gas station and put the cheapest gas you can find. So why would you do that to your own body? So you have to start changing your relationship with food so that you can no longer utilize your stem cells for addressing inflammation that comes from your diet and allow your stem cells to address other things like the process of aging, keeping your inflammation down, keeping your telomeres longer, and not keeping your stem cells distracted with silly toxins that aren't necessary.
Okay. One more, then we'll let you go. Is it possible to regrow the myelin sheath fully after nerve damage, say in a natural way, and how long might that take?
So for our neurological patients where we're trying to address some of the damaged nerve cells, or maybe there's plaque in the brain, you know, different things that could be going on, or there's inflammation in the brain, this is going to be a repeat dose process. So it's not going to be one dose of stem cells and done. And we also want to look at the full picture. Are you eating a brain-healthy diet? And a brain-healthy diet is typically very high in fats. Your brain is 75% fat. So you need to feed it fat in order to keep the brain healthy. And then doing repeat dosing, and an aggressive approach would typically be every 4 to 6 weeks doing a dose of stem cells to help rebuild some of that damaged tissue and to help bring down the inflammation. That in combination with a healthy lifestyle and decreasing toxins. Now keep in mind, toxins are not just coming from the environment. For example, food, water, you know, et cetera. They can also be mental. So reducing your mental toxins and your mental burden. So cortisol, overstressed is creating a lot of toxins in your body that are not helpful for you, and it's changing your entire hormonal outlook. So just by addressing some of the mental and physical toxins, combining that with your stem cell therapy, you can really change the course of a disease.
Is there any way that you have seen to determine inflammatory foods and we're also different other than just how we feel?
Yes, you can do something called a food inflammation test. This is where you look at the antibodies that are being created.
Yeah.
So that'll give you an idea if there are specific food items that are creating antibodies. The challenge is that a lot of this has to do with the billions of bacteria that coexist with us and your microbiome, which is we refer to as our microbiome. And your microbiome is constantly changing. So even if you measure your microbiome, for example, today, and you learn a lot of different things about, you know, your ability to process, you know, certain enzymes and break down foods, et cetera, if you were to measure a microbiome 2 months later, it could potentially be different.
Be totally different,
so
right?
It could be totally different. And so then, you know, it would change. So really, how you respond to a food is the most important thing. And the best thing that you can do is variety. Constantly changing your diet, which I know is such a challenge because we kind of get stuck in our ways and what we like. And, you know, we're creatures of habit. You know, you go to the restaurant and you always order the same thing. And so, you know, trying to introduce different foods, different vegetables, different greens, this is really the best thing that you can do for your gut health.
Mm-hmm. So there must, I don't know. So this whole grain thing, you think there's something to this where they're inflammatory for a lot of people?
Yeah, and certainly the grains that are available today are not the grains of our great-grandparents. You know, we have to deal with things like mass production, so then you've got chemicals that are placed onto the fields. Certainly we all know that glyphosate is not something that should be placed into our bodies. Could be cancer-causing, certainly could disrupt the microbiome by killing off some of the good bacteria, et cetera. So, and more people are going to be susceptible. Some people will be more susceptible than others. So just figuring out what your trigger foods are. But I often will give people a challenge when I meet them. I say, listen, 3 weeks, no grains, not one bite of grains. If you have one bite, reset your 3 weeks. And if at the end of 3 weeks you don't feel better, I'll give you $1 million. Because I'm so certain that at the end of 3 weeks, they will feel better. When you aren't using that cheap chemical energy, you start to feel better and you start to see the changes. Your body's not going to hold on to that kind of puffiness that sometimes you get when you eat grains. And people will start to feel better when they change it. So take the 3 week challenge. And if it doesn't work for you, call me up. I'll give you $1 million.
I'll be done. So you're talking, really, I'm going to do that for $1 million. So you're talking about even really good organic, I don't know, basmati rice or something like that can be affecting people, making them a little bit puffy?
Yeah, possibly. You know, if you're going to eat a grain, the one that I would say is kind of acceptable would be your white rice.
Yeah.
So white organic, not brown. Brown tends to be higher in arsenic, so that's a neurotoxin. You want to steer clear. The white rice, it's more of a non. It's more of a filler. But, you know, ask yourself, why do you need that? You know, are you hungry? Well, then you eat more vegetables. You know, so maybe avoid some of those filler foods. And it's okay on occasion to have. But I can't think of a scenario where, you know, p- pizza from Domino's would be appropriate for you.
Yeah, unless you, you know, like Jimmy Warren Buffett and have 5 million shares of Domino, then you eat there, right? Other than that.
There you go.
Other than that, yeah, oh, that's great. Well, this has been fun. Thanks so much for being on the show. Now, your main website is usstemcellclinic.com. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And I would encourage everyone to also come to my Facebook page, which is Kristen with an I, Camella, comma, PhD. I have an open Facebook page. I try to post things on there, and certainly anyone is welcome to shoot me a note there as well. I also have an Instagram account, although I'm not so great at it. I usually have to get someone who's 12 to help me out.
Yeah, you got to ask those kids. Hey, how do you do that? Oh, sure, whatever. Kristen Camella on Facebook. It's hilarious. You know, I see some of my nieces and nephews, and holy cow. I mean, they're more geek. Man, I am such a Luddite compared to these kids, and they're 6 years old. I say, here, how does this work? Oh, we're here. Just do this. Okay, thanks. Oh, well.
It's true.
Yeah. All right. Thanks thanks so much for being on the show. We really enjoyed it.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. So there you go, little stem cells, and hope you enjoyed the first chat with Dr. Lewis as well. We're going to get him back on. He's got a whole book on, boy, I really liked him a lot, huh? And going to get him back on about inflammation. And Andrew Goss will be here tomorrow. And what are we going to do? I think we're going to incline our bed on Thursday and do something else on Thursday. What are we going to do? Oh, yeah, we're going to do ketogenic things on Thursday. Another keto person. Well, you know, a lot of that going around, and the ketos don't do grains, so I don't know. I'd probably have to go into therapy if I didn't eat pasta once a week, or twice, brown rice pasta. Probably have to go into therapy. Yeah. Or just take drugs. That would work. Well, do that. All right. Well, I'll work on that. Okay, kids, I'll see you. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. Remember how we support ourselves around here is if you buy some of the products that we promote. We think we have a corral, a stable, a platform of some of the best products ever in the world. We really do. And we've been very fortunate to hook up with some cool people with the sulfur and the aloe and the Pearlseum and the Blue Shield thing for your home, all of Daniel's products, and of course, Living Streams, and what else we got? Chen Blossom, Andreas Seed Oils are cool. Really nice products. So go in our store and look around. If you see something that you like, they think it might help you, we'd appreciate you buying here than somewhere else rather than Amazon. And that's how we support ourselves. And for all of you who give us a little donation once a week, or once a month rather, you can get set up for that on the donation page, 10 or 20 bucks or 10 or 5. We really appreciate it. It comes in every month and it's very nice. Thank you. I love you all very much. Let us know if we can help with anything. Patrick Timpone, and may the blessings be.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.